Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our program tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and we talk about polygamy here. We talk about it for about halfway through the show, and then we'll open up the telephone lines for our viewers to call in and ask their questions or make their remarks about polygamy. This is a live telephone program, and we are broadcasting from Salt Lake City, Utah. And we do particularly invite the polygamous viewers to call in. We would like to hear from you. We'd like to hear what you have to say and your responses to what we have to say. Of course, we invite all of our viewers to call in as well. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. And of course, if you're in a polygamy group and you want to call but you're afraid you'll be recognized, you can always call and just say that you want to remain anonymous or use an alias, and your call will go ahead and come through. We want you to know about the helps ministry that we have for polygamists. You can go on the webpage and go to shieldandrefuge.org, shieldandrefuge.org, and you can read about the information that we have there, how we can help you if you're in a polygamy group. There is emergency help available if you or someone you know is being abused, or if you're being molested, or if you're being forced into a marriage you don't want, you can get the help that you need. First of all, if it's an emergency, you can call 911. On the webpage, there is a contact page, and there is contact information there, a toll-free number, which I want to give you. Please write it down and tuck it away someplace safe so that you can get to it if you need it. And you could call us if you are in a situation you need help. The number is 877-425-9993. That's 877-425-9993. Give us a call. Give the number to someone else if you feel like that they need to have some help as well. We have a monthly discussion group here in the Salt Lake area. We meet once a month. Usually it's the third Monday of the month. And it's for folks who have left polygamy groups, or maybe you're thinking of leaving one and you just really need to talk and you have issues you want to discuss. We also now have an online support group if you want to go there, and you can remain anonymous there and discuss your questions or concerns that you have regarding polygamy. Both of these are available, and if you want to join either one of them or both of them, just email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com and we'll give you the information to do that. And the webpage for our program is aboutpolygamy.com. You can also reach the same webpage by typing in whatloveisthis.tv, whatloveisthis.tv, and you can go there and you can watch all of our previous programs on streaming video. And now, according to the FCC, I have to read this change that's going to take place on February 17th. At midnight, full-power American television stations will end all of their analog broadcasts, and they're going to begin broadcasting in the digital format, and this will apply to this station, TV20. The transition will directly impact TV households who rely exclusively on free broadcast televisions in their home. If you're using an antenna system, you will be affected. There are three ways that you can transition to digital. You can switch to a cable or satellite television service. You can purchase a new TV set with a built-in digital tuner. Or you can purchase a DTV connector or converter box that will convert the new digital signal into the old format for an existing analog set. These boxes sell for $49 to $59, and they are available in most consumer electronic retail stores for about $40. And you can get coupons from the government. If you want more information, go to DTV Transition or go to www.dtvanswers.com. If you want one of the coupons, you can call 1-888-DTV-2009. The last two or three weeks, We have had a lot of telephone calls and emails in response to some of our content. And I just have not been able to get to them on the show because when we have guests, we want to devote the time to talking with our guest. And so next week, we're not scheduling a guest, but we are going to take the time to answer the emails and the questions that we haven't been able to answer on the air. So if we haven't answered your question yet, please be patient. Tune in next week, and we're going to try to get to all of them, or at least most of them, that we're backlogged on. There was a couple of them I did want to address tonight, however. And so I will talk to Shirley in Centerville. Shirley called last week, and she wanted to know if I had a son by a certain name. And I'm just going to tell you, Shirley, no, I don't have a son by that name, but I don't answer private questions on the air anyway. And Shirley asked if Mary Mackert is now involved in any religion. Now, Mary Mackert was our guest last week, and so that's why she's asking the question. Mary's not here tonight, but I know her very well, and I do know enough about that answer that I can answer for Mary. And yes, Shirley, Mary is involved in a religion right now. She has embraced biblical Christianity. She has embraced the Savior of the Bible. And the biblical Christianity basically is they use the Bible. We use the Bible only for doctrine. And we depend upon Jesus Christ only and alone for salvation. And that pretty much discusses what biblical Christianity is. And that is what Mary has embraced. And she, let me tell you, she's a very committed and a very sweet Christian woman. She also asked if there is any mental abuse in the groups. Yes, Shirley, there's a lot of mental abuse in the polygamy groups. There's not one single polygamy group where there isn't mental abuse and emotional abuse. And most of it's perpetrated through mind control because they have the minds of those babies from the cradle. And so they raise them with their doctrine and the abuse that goes with it and the threats and all that goes with it. Every single polygamy group that is a Mormon fundamentalist type group does have that abuse. We also had a call from Zenith in Salt Lake City. I don't know how to pronounce the name correctly. I'm thinking that's what it is. And Zenith wanted to know how polygamists support themselves with big families. Well, you know, each group is different. And in fact, you can get into these groups and you'll find different families that will maybe embrace a different way that they handle their large families. Some of the groups will require the women to produce a baby a year, and then they'll also require the women to go out and make a living for and support themselves. And some of these women will have 12, 14, 16 children. That isn't unusual either. Some women will babysit a lot of the children while the other women can go out and work and make their living. The FLDS group will have several mothers and one father in the same home. And he will bring home the bacon, so to speak. But then some of the women will also do different kinds of jobs or works and supplement the income. When the boys are old enough to go out and work with their father, they also will help to supplement. So there's various ways that they do. But let me say this. Most of the polygamy groups are very lucrative. Very, very lucrative. And most of the people in the groups live in abject poverty. It's really a disgrace. Zenith had another question, but I'll answer that one next week. And then the last question is Shirley in Tooele. She wanted to know if the women can take their kids with them when they leave, and do the husbands fight for those kids? Now, again, each polygamy group is different. The FLDS believe the children belong to the priesthood and not to the mother, so the mother has no right to take them with her, and they'll fight for them. I'm working with the woman now who had to leave her three children behind when she left, and now she has to fight for those kids. Whether or not that'll happen, we don't know, because she does not have much in resources. But we are working with her for that. The children, sometimes, especially if they're older kids, already are under the mind control, and maybe they don't want to be fought for. Maybe they want to stay behind because they think that their mother, according to doctrine, has led them right straight to hell, because they teach if you leave the group, you go to hell. So it is a very difficult thing. And the father will sometimes fight for the children. Right now, I know a woman where she did fight for her children. And as soon as the fight was over, the judge gave her custodial custody, the custodial parent, and the father just dropped him like a hot potato, and now he's out of there. He doesn't care. The fight is over. He was fighting for the kids. He didn't get them, so now he never sees the kids. You know, it's very strange how they work, but that's what happens. And I'll answer more questions next week. But now I'd like to introduce our special guest for tonight. Our guest is Brian Mackert, and we would like to thank you for coming again, Brian. Brian was here last July. He was a guest on the show, and he had been writing a book, and it was almost finished and ready to go to the publisher. And now it has been published and released in October, I believe.
Yes, it was released in October.
Okay. And so now Brian will talk a little bit about the book, and then we have other things we want to talk. So we have a lot of new viewers now from the time you were here in last July, and we're on Dish Network now too, so we've got thousands of new viewers. Would you like to introduce yourself to our new viewers and tell a little bit about your background?
Sure. First of all, congratulations on going to Dish Network, and I just want to thank you, Doris, for the work that you're doing in educating the public about polygamy and the issues that people leaving polygamy face, and the work you're doing through A Shield and Refuge and helping those who are leaving or being forced out of polygamy. I just want to express my thanks to you in that. I was raised in a fundamentalist polygamous Mormon family. My father had four wives and 31 children. I'm a seventh generation Mormon. My family history in the mainstream Mormon church goes back to the days of Joseph Smith when he presented his revelation on polygamy back in Nauvoo. My fourth great grandfather was a member of the church's first high council and voted to accept that revelation as being a revelation from God. And since then, that revelation has been incorporated as the 132nd section of the Doctrine and Covenants.
Yeah.
Well, from that day on, polygamy has been in my family, right down to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wrote a book about I wanted to write a book about the hope and healing that came to me after leaving the fundamentalist polygamous Mormon sect, the FLDS Church, which is now led by Warren Jeffs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first memoir written from the male perspective, and it focuses on some of the issues that young men face who are raised in a polygamous
mm-hmm.
home. It also focuses on my relationship, or the lack thereof, with my earthly father, and then later on, my relationship with my heavenly father. After I embraced Christianity, I became a licensed Baptist minister about 3.5 years ago, and I currently work on a volunteer basis in prisons and in jails, working with men who've either been victims of abuse, grew up in fatherless situations, because in the prison system, it's a repetitive cycle. Father is imprisoned, then son is imprisoned.
Yeah.
And also in ministering to those who became sexual predators and helping them understand the healing power of Christ and the healing power of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. And the healing power that would take place in your life is no different than the healing power that God can bring about in the lives
of those. Message is transitional.
It's the same, right. Would you like to explain or maybe tell our viewers about the book signing event that we're having day after tomorrow?
Yes, on Saturday, January 31st, from 11 to 3 p.m. at the Lifeway Christian Bookstore. It's on
6336
yes.
South State Street.
And that's across from the Fashion Place Mall on the other side of State Street.
Right.
I'll be down there to do a book signing. So if you would like to get a copy of my book and get it signed, you can come down there between 11 and 3. If you aren't able to make it down there, there's another way that people can get a signed copy of my book, and that's by the fundraising that we're doing to help A Shield and Refuge in helping people get out of polygamy. My publisher was kind enough to offer A Shield and Refuge the opportunity to be able to get my book at a special price that isn't available to any other ministry. I don't even get a royalty from the books that A Shield and Refuge purchases for this cause. And if anyone makes a $50 donation or more, they'll get a signed copy of my book mailed to them as our thank you gift. And in that will be a special handwritten thank you note from me to them, thanking them for supporting the work that you're doing and helping those who are leaving polygamy or being forced out.
And we thank you so much for that. That's such a big help. And your book has such a beautiful message in it that the healing is possible. It took so many years for me to come to that healing, and it's so beautiful and awesome. I just love the message you've got to tell these people.
Well, thank you. That's the reason why I felt God wanted me to write the book, was to help people understand that there is hope and healing that can come regardless. You didn't have to grow up in a polygamous family or be neglected by your parents in order to experience the healing power of Christ.
And your book is from the male perspective, like you mentioned. There's a lot of very, very good books out by the women, but you know, the men, the males in these groups are victims as well. They've been victimized too.
And that's one thing that the media tends to ignore is the plight of these young men.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a little bit more focus on how we can help these young men. Mm-hmm. Not all of the men who come out of polygamy end up in desperate situations, but that's the ones that do, that's Children Refuge is there for. Those are the ones we want to help. Ones who are capable of coming out and standing on their own, well, they don't need our help.
Yeah.
But what about the lost boys, the ones that are driven from the communities to make room for the elite to be able to have their multiple marriages?
Right. And if you're interested in finding on the line, you can go to our webpage to find the place that you can order the book. If you don't come down to the book signing event, you can go online and order the book. You would go to www.shieldandrefuge.org/Hagar. And the reason it's called Hagar is because it's a Hagar fund that we have set up for the donations that this book is going to bring in for the ministry, specifically to help families, individuals, mothers, boys, who whatever help that they need when they come in. Sometimes the resources are limited, and we really need to have the funding so that we can properly help and provide the needs for these people. And when Hagar was sent out from Abraham and Sarah, she was sent out with her son Ishmael, and she didn't have any place to go but the desert. We don't want you to go to the desert. We'd like you to call us and contact us. We have the phone number, the toll-free number, 877-425-9993. If you do need emergency help, don't hesitate to give us a call, and we will certainly help you. Now, tonight, Brian and I want to discuss the unique needs that men, women, children, families, whoever leaves a polygamy group. If you're thinking of leaving, we want to discuss those unique needs that polygamists have that perhaps no one else in the society might have under these circumstances of being out in the world, in a world they are not aware of before. Where do they go? What do they do? What are their needs? How do they get those needs? How do we know what their needs are? Do they have a home they can go to?
It's overwhelming, isn't it?
It's absolutely overwhelming. And each situation is different. You know, we might have a woman with 4 kids, a woman with 14 kids, or a man. We've had a lot of males call the ministry.
You might have a man who only has a 6th to 8th grade education, no employable job skills. You might also have a man who already has multiple wives and has lost his faith and wants to come out. Mm-hmm. So each case is unique.
It is.
And it has to be dealt with uniquely.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to connect them to the resources that they need to be able to make that transition and make it successfully. One of the things that people don't understand is the dynamic for the young men who are being forced out of polygamy or leave on their own because they get discouraged. And what we need to understand is the math.
Yes.
Okay? In polygamous cults, the majority of them preach that in order to become a god one day, you have to have 3 polygamous wives. Now, if we do the math, most communities have a birth rate around 50-50. Worldwide, it's 49% male and 51% female, but we'll just say about 50-50 for the sake of argument. Well, if a man has 3 wives, that means that 2 young men had to be driven from the community.
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat, 2/3 of the male population in a polygamous group has to be denied by their leaders the right to enter into a single marriage.
Right, a single marriage. And they have to live polygamy in order to be anybody.
Yes, and they learn that they're one of the ones that's being blackballed, that's being excluded. They're not going to be one of the elite. They're going to be forced out of the community, and they lose heart. They become discouraged and they leave on their own. Or they're actually driven from the community and dropped off on a nearby street in a nearby town and, mm-hmm. and told not to come back to the community. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't account for all of them, though.
No.
Now, what about the men like Winston Blackmore, who was recently arrested up in Canada?
Mm-hmm.
He has, it's reported that he has 20 wives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means that 19 young men had to be driven from the community for him to have those 19 extra wives. Now, what about Warren Jeffs? It's rumored that Warren Jeffs has 120 wives. That means 119 men
right.
had to be driven from the community mm-hmm. just for him to have those 119 extra wives. So here we have...
And that's just one man.
That's just one man.
Yeah.
So it would be a safe estimate to say that about 75% of the male population has to be driven from these polygamous communities so that the elite can have their multiple wives, and the elite aren't satisfied with just three.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And you know, a lot of the people, that we hear the story of the Lost Boys, and it's basically from the FLDS community, and I don't think that folks understand all of the polygamy groups have a Lost Boys syndrome. They have a Lost Boys problem. It just isn't just from the FLDS group.
Mm-hmm.
All of the groups have the same difficulty that you just mentioned, the math.
Mm-hmm.
The math doesn't work with polygamy. It just doesn't work.
It just doesn't add up. So first we need to understand that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then there are other issues that these young men face. For me, growing up in a large family where I was the 28th of my father's 31 children, I was one of the youngest ones in my father's family, and I was constantly striving for my father's attention and affection and never got it because he couldn't spread himself thin enough.
Right.
Now, where do young men learn how to be a husband, a father, a man? They learn that by watching their fathers and having it modeled for them. They learn how a man and a woman interact in a relationship by watching their parents. Well, if they never see that because their dad is never around, where are they going to learn that from? Well, for me, I learned that from my older brothers who are trying to figure out how to be men themselves. It becomes a very dysfunctional cycle.
It is, yeah.
Imagine a man growing up in this type of a situation, and he ends up having multiple wives. And then those children end up having multiple wives. Each generation gets more and more dysfunctional in the way
right.
that they relate to
it's
each other, and
their
understanding what it means to be a man, a husband, and a father. And, you know, you can pound it in their heads with religion, but that doesn't show them how people interact on an interpersonal level, on a human level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a religious ideal on how we should interact with each other, but we're all human. We all make mistakes, and we all
right.
lose our temper.
Right.
Well,
right.
how do you deal with those adverse situations? These young men have it modeled for them by their parents who, in a polygamous situation, just aren't there.
And it goes the same thing with the females. I mean, the same modeling takes place. And if a woman sees their mother being browbeaten or a second rate or third rate or far on down the totem pole, so to speak, they're conditioned. They're just conditioned by that lifestyle to accept that for themselves as they grow older as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when families leave, if they have older members in the family, like we've talked already, they are conditioned already because they've been in the group for several years. But you get, I know a family who left a polygamy group many, many years ago. The whole family left, the wife, the husband, and all the children. They all left together. And the husband is still struggling. He's still having so many difficulties dealing with life.
Mm.
He was born and raised in the group. They have a lot of children. They've never looked back. They're never sorry that they left. They know they did the right thing. But because of the conditioning from his birth up until he was a man with grown children, that's all he knew was the group. And, you know, when they leave, they don't have, some of them don't have birth certificates. They don't have credit ratings because the group usually is their protector, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have, they can't buy a car, they can't buy a house. Maybe they can't even rent an apartment because they don't have a credit rating.
Mm.
So there's a lot of, and this isn't with everybody, but this is with some. So they have different issues that they've got to, obstacles, mountains sometimes.
Yes. Well, you know, I would like to get into the material aspect a little bit later. I'd like to focus on their need for counseling right now. And
okay.
when I say that they need counseling, mm-hmm. I don't mean that they are crazy, they're nuts, or that they have some kind of mental disorder. I'm talking about getting counseling for the dysfunctional environment in which they were raised so they can stop that dysfunctional cycle
mm-hmm.
and be able to protect future relationships and be able to have healthy future relationships. To learn what it means to be a husband and a father, you have to renew your mind. You have to reset your mind on a different set of goals.
You have to unlearn a lot.
And yes, you have to unlearn a lot. And so, for these young men who are growing up like I did in essentially a fatherless situation, they, when they are forced out of a polygamous community or when they get discouraged and they leave on their own, they have a very low self-esteem. Because think about it. They're being rejected by their God.
Because they left.
Okay. So they're not experiencing the love of God. They're experiencing the judgment. They've been rejected by their prophet. They've been rejected by their father, their family, and their community. Every aspect of their life where they would they would have affirmation of their self-worth is now gone. And they're left to go out and face a world that they've been told hates them, is full of demons and people who are possessed by devils who want to destroy them. And the picture they paint of this outside world is so frightening. And they're being their choice is to remain and continue to strive and know that they're never going to be accepted, or to leave. Or some boys don't have the choice; they're driven out.
They're removed.
And they face this very bleak future.
And they're like you. I mean, in your book, and when you were here last time, you talked about your strong desire to want to be loved by your father. That's not unique. That happens to all these other boys as well. They want that love as well.
Oh, even
and they accept it.
Even when I found out that my father was molesting my sisters, I was forced to go and live with him at the age of 16 because I got so unruly, my mother couldn't handle me anymore. And I went back and I lived with my father for a while, and I still longed for that intimate relationship with him and thought, this is my one chance, because it was just him and his first wife and me living in the house. No other kids, nothing else around, and I wanted to connect with my father, even though I knew what kind of a man he was, that he had sexually abused my sisters, and the very thought of that made my skin crawl, but I still wanted to be loved by him. There's this inherent need in young men to be loved and accepted by their fathers, their families, by God. Now, they leave this the polygamous environment having all those affirmations shot down. And many of them turn to self-medication.
Yes, they do.
I turned to alcohol, and I turned to drugs, got addicted to crystal meth. I began chasing skirts, you know, and began living as fast and as wild as I could, because I figured if I'm going to hell anyway, I wanted to earn it. You know, I didn't want to go to hell just because the prophet didn't think that I was worthy, or because I couldn't live faithfully the tenets of the faith. And so I wanted to earn it, and wanted to have some kind of good memories that I could look back on while I'm sitting there roasting the lake of fire, you know. And so I just went completely wild. And many of these young men end up addicted to drugs.
Yes, they do.
Or addicted to alcohol. They don't know how to have a healthy relationship with a woman.
Or with other people.
Or with their children. And so they end up, some of them have ended up strung out on drugs, addicted to alcohol, homeless. And some have even committed suicide.
They have.
So,
how do we help? Other crimes where they end up in jail.
So when we look at helping these young men, we aren't just looking at trying to help them adjust to society. We might be in need of substance abuse counseling for them. So there are many reasons why, when a young man leaves a polygamous community, he needs counseling.
He does. He needs counseling. The women also need the counseling. They need to know that they are not objects just for a husband. They need to know that their salvation doesn't depend on their marriage or their husband, as they know. And in fact, that leads us right into one of the needs that maybe they don't even know they need, and that's the spiritual need, because all of their lives, these folks are raised with God looking over their shoulder, with God watching everything. Like you say, it's a wrathful God, a judgmental God. It's not the God of love that truly exists, you know, that the Bible teaches about. But when they leave, often they've had so much of it, they've had it up to here, they throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes.
And now they have this void in their life. And what are they going to fill that void with? maybe the same things you just spoke about. And this is why counseling is helpful as well, because they need to fill that void with a healthy view of God. You know, I wasn't set free till I knew God did not require polygamy in me. Mm-hmm. And that was years. But I wasn't set free until I knew that.
Well, you know, when I was young, I grew up with this view of God where, you remember Mickey Mouse and the rendition that Disney did with Jack and the Beanstalk. And he's running from the giant. These big footsteps are right behind him. And he's running from this wrathful giant. That was the way I viewed God. I viewed God as this big giant who was just waiting to squash me, and he was trying to catch up to me, and I was running as fast
as
I could from him.
That's about the way I did, too.
So there's a need for them to be able to understand that God does love them, and God has not forsaken them, and that the trials that they may be going through right now that are leading them out of these polygamous communities may be the things that God has put in place so that he can draw them closer to himself.
And they can know that they can live a life without the fear, mm-hmm. you know, that God's chasing them or after them, or some of them even throw God out and just say there's not a God, you know, turn atheist.
Yeah. Well, what do we do about the material needs of these young boys? When I got out of the polygamous cult that I was raised in, I joined the military to get away. Now, it was a wonderful experience for me. Back then, the military did not require a high school education or a GED. And I got 3 hots and a cot and a paycheck just for playing G.I. Joe. What more can a little boy want? You know, it was great. I loved it. It made a great safety net for me. They fed me, they clothed me, and I learned to adjust to society at my own pace. But many of these boys don't even have that opportunity, because nowadays the military requires a high school education and a GED in order for you to enter the armed services. And many of these young boys who come out of these polygamous communities don't even have a high school education.
Right.
Some of them do. I'm not saying all of them don't, so don't get me wrong there. But many of them don't.
Some of them don't even have a junior high education, though. We could go back that far.
Yeah. You also have the dynamic of, what do they do when establishing themselves as a person in the outside world? You mentioned earlier about the credit history, the work history, the job skills. Well, in my family, some of my siblings didn't even have a birth certificate.
Yeah.
And those who did, only one of my father's children with my mother actually had my father listed as correctly as their natural father. The rest were fictitious names that were used to hide my father's identity. They were falsifying government documents to hide the fact that my father was a polygamist.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And that happens all, that's not unusual. That's
well, the irony of it is the one child that actually had him listed correctly as their natural father was the one child that he tried to disown. So it was an interesting irony there.
Poetic justice there.
But, they don't even, if they don't have a birth certificate, my brother David didn't even have a birth certificate.
I didn't get one until 95.
He had to get affidavits.
Yeah.
From people who were there when he was born and get a birth certificate after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
What about a Social Security number?
I don't know what they're doing. I think it's individual. What's going on in different families and different groups?
You know, some polygamous cults might teach that a Social Security number is the mark of Satan.
The mark of the beast.
The mark of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And that you shouldn't have a Social Security number. So the thing we need to do is we need to help them with getting the documentation that they need to establish mm-hmm. themselves in the outside world.
Find out
world.
What they have. And
but then there's the educational factor, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know
the women very often probably have less education than the men.
Yes, from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong,
uh-huh.
they usually in a polygamous situation, when they marry a man, her husband will come to her, if she's a plural wife, and say, you don't need to finish your education. I need you here at home taking mm-hmm. care of my children so one of my other wives can go out and work.
Mm-hmm.
And so she ends up cutting off her education around the 6th to 8th grade.
They and that can be that young, or it can be 9th graders, you know, even graduate. They can graduate, but not any further. Most of the polygamy groups do believe that the woman's highest calling is to be a polygamist wife and produce children.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are a polygamist wife, whether it's second, third, first, whichever number, it doesn't matter, they are assisting this God in the embryo to achieve his mm-hmm. highest glory. And so she's a rung of the ladder for him to become a god. Now, early Mormon doctrine, I've got quotes, where they say that Mormon men are gods in embryo. Mm-hmm. Well, the polygamous groups believe that even stronger, mm-hmm. exactly, because you can't become a god unless you practice polygamy, and so the woman is needed. So what education does she need? She doesn't need an education. Nothing outside of the group is as important as what she's doing.
Her only worth is birthing children and being...
And helping her husband become a god.
Keeping a sweet spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, so they don't need to have an education. So then they leave, and what happens?
Well, they can't sustain themselves without an education, employable job skills, and they're probably going to be bringing a brood of children with mm-hmm, them that they have
likely.
To support.
Yeah.
Well, these children, whether they're male or female, need an education.
They do.
They also need vocational training.
They do.
An education alone won't help you be successful in the outside world. You need employable job skills.
That's going to pay you some good
So we need to salary. Connect these kids to the vocational training that they need so that they can be successful mm-hmm. and be able to provide for themselves and sustain themselves. But then even if we get them that vocational training, they're going to need material support to begin with.
That's
because
right.
they, while they're going through this vocational training, where mm-hmm. are they going to stay? How are they going to clothe themselves? What are they going to eat? Who's going to pay mm-hmm. the electric bill?
It's overwhelming.
When you begin to itemize the obstacles,
mm-hmm.
is it any wonder that so many of them go back?
And what happens when they go back? They're forced to penance. They're forced to discipline. They're forced to grovel, asking for forgiveness to come mm-hmm. back. They're put on probation for who knows how long, mm-hmm. you know, because they had the audacity to leave and go against the leader the first time to go back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is... And you know what, Brian? Right now, I think we ought to mention the fact that we're not trying to dissuade people from leaving.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do is, if you're thinking about it, do it. We're here to help. We're here to help with all of those issues. It's just like somebody may be fleeing Darfur, the Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
You know if they leave their country, if they leave their home, they leave their family, they may never see them again. But if they stay, they may be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the hardest thing they ever did was leave. But several months later or a year later, they'll look back and they'll say, it's the best thing I ever did.
Yeah. Well, in helping these kids, putting this information out on all these obstacles these children are going to face, like you said, we don't want to discourage people who want to leave. What we want to do is educate you, the public, on what these people face, the overwhelming obstacles that they face in leaving polygamy, and why it is that we need your help in providing the resources that they need to be able to make that transition successfully.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need more lost boys running around on the streets of our cities, homeless, addicted to drugs, and all the other dysfunctional traits.
And we want to make them, the ones that are there, we want to help them become productive members
of
society.
Yes, we want to draw them out of that and make them productive.
Well, we are ready to open up the telephone lines. We still have a lot to talk about, but we still know that you have some things you'd like to say as well. So if you would like to call 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820, Brian or I can answer your questions. It looks like we've got some calls coming in already there.
Okay.
We have an off-the-air question. What is the relationship between Brian and Mary? Go for it.
Okay. My sister Mary was my mother's first child. And she was married at the age of 17 when I was only a year and a half old. And she became one of the girls that we call in our polygamous community a poofer. Poof, she was gone. As soon as she got married, that was the last time I saw her. It took 11 years for me to ever see her again after she got married because of how secretive her husband was about his wives and who he had married. We weren't even allowed to visit her. And so I missed out on ever really knowing my sister until I was about 11 or 12 years old. But I love Mary dearly, and she is my full-blooded biological sister. So that's the relationship between me and Mary. I see also that you've asked, when did I become a Christian? I became a Christian about 13 years ago.
Okay, on line two, we have Debbie from Harriman. Line two is not lit up. Let's go line three. That is Jay from Washington County. Hello, Jay.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
We was talking about the education of some of these young men. I was just wondering, how it's determined, when they're done going to school. I mean, does the father determine that or the mother or say, you know, Warren Jeffs or whoever the leader may be.
When they're not going to school?
Yeah, I mean, you say some don't even have junior high education. Very few have high school educations, you know.
Well, Jay, the polygamous cult that I was raised in, the FLDS Church, many of these young men went away on what's called a work mission, where they serve the community. It's not a proselytizing or an evangelical mission. It's just going and being on a working party to build up the streets or do something like that for the community, or even work on the farms of some of the leaders, which they're lining the pockets of their leaders by going on these work missions. And they go at young ages. Sometimes their educational process stops there, but ultimately the decision on when their educational process would stop is determined by their father, because their father is their priesthood head and he is responsible for them. Well, if he needs more money to sustain the family and he needs a boy to stop going to school at the age of 16 and go get himself a job working in a convenience store or someplace like that to bring in more money to sustain the family, he might tell his son that that's what he needs to do. And that would end his educational process. Now, most of the men do end up finishing their high school educations. We don't mean to communicate that all of them end up with less than a high school education. Does that answer your question, Jay?
I think he hung up.
Okay, he may have dropped off.
But there is that situation that happened with the FLDS when Warren Jeffs closed the public schools and everybody was supposed to be homeschooled. And they weren't homeschooling them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why there isn't a check. Isn't education mandatory to a certain grade? I mean, in Arizona, I'm not sure what the mandatory age is, but in Utah, it's to age 16.
Well, you know, what's an interesting dynamic is if I stopped allowing my son to go to public schools and just decided to pull him out and send him off to work somewhere, the state would come and arrest me for neglect of my child. You know, why isn't this going on in these polygamous communities with these children who, you know, where's the control, where's the oversight to make sure that these children aren't being neglected when it comes to their education?
That's a good question. That's good. Okay, maybe we can get somebody who's in the know to call in and give us that answer. Okay, now line two, let's see if Debbie's there. Hello, Debbie?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air now.
All right.
What's your question?
My question, thank you. My question would be, I was wondering, with having 50 wives, 100 wives, 3 wives, 5 wives, no birth certificates, how much do they use the welfare system, the social services system? What kind of money are we talking, realistically, like just the state of Utah alone?
Well, I know that, Debbie, for the Colorado City and Hilldale communities, those are the border towns on Utah and Arizona, for every dollar that they send in taxes, they take back $8 in welfare and other handouts from the government in the form of some form of welfare. And they view this as a doctrine that they call bleeding the beast. They mm-hmm. they have a very derogatory view of the government and see it as an enemy of their faith. And it's okay to commit welfare fraud to bleed that beast.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually taught that it's that the government and these welfare systems are God's provision for their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one remark I heard from one of the groups was that the group paid so much money in income taxes, it was a good way to get some of that money back.
Mm-hmm.
So they put all the women and the children on the welfare. Okay, line one. We have Karen from Salt. Oh, did that answer your question, Debbie?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for calling. All right, let's go to line one, Karen. Hello, Karen.
Yes, I have two questions.
Okay.
My first question is, the last name of Hansen, is that the name that you had when you were involved with polygamy?
The last name Hansen was my mother's maiden name. When she got married, she was a second wife, And when she got married, they have to make up fake last names. They have to have a phony identity and a phony father's name and so on and so forth. So she, what she did was she changed her name to Hansen, only with a different spelling. Instead of an E-N, she changed it to an O-N. And that's the name that I carry right now.
Okay, because the reason I'm asking, and in fact that would fit, is because my main name is Hansen with an E-N, and I discovered when I moved down here to Salt Lake and started doing some research, not that I was raised Mormon or anything, but I discovered that I came from a polygamy line of Hansen's, and I just thought, who knew, I might be a relative of yours.
I don't know. My grandfather never lived polygamy, so... So the name Hansen, where that would have come from, wouldn't have been from that side of the family. And my mother was the one, the first one that did.
Okay.
And, but she was a Hansen with an E-N.
Okay. Well, I know that my family came from Denmark with the Hansen with an E-N, and so I've been just trying to kind of piece together my life, and that was my first question. Next question.
When you find out, let me know, because my family's from Denmark, too.
Well, Karen, my father had a private school for polygamous children, and there was a family that came to my father's private school with the last name of Hansen, spelled with an E-N. I don't know if they're related or not, but I know that there were some Hansens.
Well, as I said, both my parents, actually, and that I know that my mother's side of the family broke away from the polygamous group. In fact, my parents were, my father came from one wife, and my mother's side of the family came from another wife, and her side broke away from the family and went up to Minnesota, and they ended up, the two of them ended up meeting in California. And so when people ask me what my maiden name is and what my mother's maiden name is, and when I tell them that they're both Hansen, why, when I was younger, people would look at me and say, no, no, dear, we want your mother's maiden name, not her name, when she married your father. And I go, well, if I told you how it's both the same, you're probably going to want to lock me up. But my next question
okay.
You've been talking a lot about the emotional side of things. My curiosity is, when you get these young people, do you have them checked out for genetic problems? Because in such a closed society, as a lot of these polygamy groups are, I would think that things that are genetically passed down, diabetes, well, we can go on and on with so many things you were talking about, which a lot of people think is mental illness, but bipolar, which is actually a chemical imbalance. You know,
Karen, with your question there, we have not done that to date. We have not had them checked out, and that's probably beyond what we would be doing as our job, unless there was definite medical problems that needed to be addressed. Now, we do realize that there is incest in some of these groups, and there are difficulties as a result of that incest, but right now we don't do that type of testing.
I was thinking not only incest, but, you know, just thinking of my own situation. Fortunately, nothing came about, but, you know, my father's grandfather was my mother's great-grandfather. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I understand what you're saying. And Karen, we really need to go to another caller. So if you want to email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com, I'd be love to carry on this conversation with you further.
Okay.
Okay.
I just think that it's something that someone should kind of think about for those children. Anyway,
okay.
Have a good evening.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Karen.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, line 3, we have Lou from Provo. Hello, Lou.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
I just had a comment about private schools. The Utah Constitution said that you have to be educated until you're 16, but it doesn't say in the public schools.
Mm.
You have to be educated. And to start a private school in Utah, you just have to check with the zoning in the county and the zoning, if the state has any laws, and they don't. So you check with the county. If they don't have anything on zoning, you name your school, and you don't have to have a high school education or college education until they get in the secondary schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the age of 16, you would be, what, in the 10th grade? So there are many who come from these communities who only have a 6th to 8th grade education. When I joined the military to leave the polygamous cult that I was raised in, I only had an 8th grade education. So even at that standard that you've just mentioned, it is still neglectful not to make sure that those children get to an education at least the age of 16 or the 10th grade.
Oh, I know it's not a good thing, but I'm just saying that's what the laws are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what the regulations are. So
that's interesting.
They can't go in and check them because if they get their name of their school, or private school, they can't. They don't have by law can go in and check on them. But it is sad that that's what's happening.
Yes,
but
it is.
Anyway, those are the rules.
Thank you, Lou. We appreciate the information.
Excellent point.
Bye. Okay, we have Sue Ellen on line two. Hello, Sue Ellen.
Hi, Doris.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, you asked about why children are not attending school and why they're not found out. I used to teach in Seattle, and the truancy laws were very strong there. If a child was out of school 1 or 2 days, they had systems in place to go and find the children and bring them back to school. But when I worked in West Valley, there were a lot of children that were not going to school for a month or two, and they weren't found. So I think it's due to the truancy laws. There's just not a system in place to go and find the children, besides the polygamy families being so isolated and secluded.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem on top of what you were discussing.
And that's a very good point. Thank you, Sue Ellen. So we need a little bit of truancy laws or enforcement laws, maybe.
Exactly.
Okay.
Those are difficult to do when you're living in a closed and secretive society and when where your children are going to a private school that doesn't have that government oversight like you would have in a public school.
Right. Okay. Okay, thank you, Sue Ellen.
Good night.
Good night. We have a comment from Ruth. Would you like to read that one, Brian?
Oh, she says, what you're doing is marvelous and you're doing God's work. Well, thank you, Ruth. We appreciate your encouragement. And,
yes, it is encouraging.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Okay, we can go back now to some of these other points that we were talking about. Did we talk about the emotional points?
Yes, we got into that. One of the things that I do want to focus on, well, we talked about different situations that young men might be leaving polygamy from and how they are unique. Each situation has to be handled uniquely because it might they all have different dynamics. Well, what do you do with a man who has multiple wives and he's lost his faith and wants to come out of a polygamous cult? I had an interesting dialogue with a young man by the name of Jessup who had two wives and he had lost his faith in polygamy and wanted to know what to do. And for those who are ministering to men in this situation, I would like to encourage you to put the focus on his need for a Savior, not what he should do with his wives after he becomes a Christian or before he becomes a Christian. His salvation, according to Christian doctrine,
his salvation
is his greatest need. His salvation is not dependent upon how many wives he has. His salvation is dependent upon his faith in the atonement that Christ made for his sins 2,000 years ago upon a cross and the fact that Christ rose from the grave and ascended to heaven as God's physical and visible evidence that atonement had been made for our sin. If you believe that, you will be saved. If you believe that his blood is sufficient for all of your sin. So focus on his need for a Savior before you focus on what to do with his family. This is the advice
that
I gave.
That'll take care of itself, yeah.
This is the advice that I gave this young man. And what happened was I told him he needed to go and talk to his wives about what it was that he believed, that he had embraced Christianity and was renouncing his Mormon faith. And when he presented the gospel to his wives, his first wife decided that she was going to become a Christian too. His second wife ended up going back to the fundamentalists, and the problem resolved itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't know that all situations are going to work out neat and clean, but it takes delicacy and being compassionate towards these men in these situations.
Absolutely.
Don't beat them over the head with, you got to have one wife before you can become a Christian. That's not what Christianity is about.
Right, absolutely. Good point. Okay, we have Line 1, Don from Bountiful is calling. Hello, Don.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Doris?
Yes, this is Doris.
Yes, I'd like to compliment you on your program and also Brian.
Thank you.
My question is, how about if somebody wanted to help these young men and bring them into their home and to educate them and to get them on the right track? How hard is that with these people that have had this tremendous thing in their life?
Oh, that's an excellent question, Don, because many of these young men have trust issues. Their God has forsaken them, their father has forsaken them, their family has forsaken them, their community has forsaken them, and now you're asking them to trust you. So one of the things that you're going to have to deal with are these trust issues. You're going to have to work harder to maintain that relationship with this young man as you bring him into your home and try and nurture him and help him adjust to society. So, and he doesn't trust society either. He's been told it's full of demons and devils. So you're going to have a lot of trust issues to deal with. I would encourage you to get that young man into some form of counseling if you can.
Or you could have them contact a ministry like ours to get the help that they need.
What about donating your time to come down and help these people if you had some extra time?
Would you like to email me, tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and we can discuss this?
Yeah, I could.
Okay. We're getting close to the end of the show, and so we're kind of short on time right now.
Well, I appreciate you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. God bless you, Don.
Good night. Well, we're towards about out of time here, so we have one more caller that if you would leave a message, perhaps we can address your call next week, or you can give us a call next week. Thanks for sharing again. And normally, there's so much information, we just don't have the time to cover everything.
Well, that's why we do this every week.
Absolutely right. And I'd like to thank you for watching the show with us tonight, and we do hope that you have learned more about polygamy and the troubles. If you are thinking of leaving, if you're a family, or if you're a single person, man, woman, it doesn't matter. Call us. We'll help you. The number is 877-425-9993. You know, we don't force anybody into believing anything. There are thousands of hospitals and mercy ships and rescue missions and medical centers all over the world that are have been originated and started by Christians. And they just do it to help, not to force you into anything. And that's what we want to do. We just want to help you. We want you to get free, be free. Know that Jesus alone is the Savior. Salvation is a gift. It's a gift from God, and that's what we want you to take, and we want to show you how to do it. We thank you for joining us tonight. We thank you for watching the show. Be at the Lifeway Christian Bookstore on Saturday, and we'll see you next week on Polygamy, What Love Is This? Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.